Recent statistics suggest that over half of all sharks are at risk of extinction, and yet relatively few protective measures are in place globally. The movie Jaws may seem an unlikely inspiration for shark conservation, but for creator Peter Benchley and his wife Wendy, Jaws opened their eyes to the plight of sharks and kicked off a lifelong effort to educate the public and improve policies to protect sharks. Now, the organizers of the Jaws Tribute Festival, Jaws Fest 2012, hope that an art exhibit can help foster a similar love of sharks in fans of the movie. Joining me to talk about sharks, art, and conservation is Wendy Benchley. She's the chair of the board for Shark Savers, a nonprofit shark conservation group, and of course, the widow of Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws. I also have Susan Siegel Goldsmith, organizer of Jaws Fest 2012 and the accompanying Sharks, Art, and Conservation event. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Heather.
You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Now, Wendy, Jaws, as I understand it, was your husband Peter's first foray into the world of fiction writing. Prior to that, he'd been a newspaper reporter and even a presidential speechwriter. What inspired him to write a book about a beach community terrorized by a man-eating shark?
Well, he grew up summers in Nantucket, so he was very much a part of the ocean and did a lot of fishing with his father, and oftentimes they'd catch a nice bass or something and it would be eaten by sharks almost before it could get to the boat. And he was a great surfer and ocean lover and a researcher and a guy with a great imagination. And I think what really sparked the idea for Jaws was the huge shark that was caught off of in the Long Island Sound. It was over 4,000 pounds. And
wow.
At that time, people did not know much about sharks. There was not a lot of research on them. People were just beginning to think about them. The rogue shark theory was in vogue, and that has since been disproven and discounted.
What is the rogue shark theory?
The rogue shark theory was that once a shark tasted human flesh, that sort of excited them to have more.
Uh-huh.
And so that was very much in vogue, as I say. And so I think Peter, being a guy with a good imagination, thought, my glory, what if a really large great white shark hung around the town and caused it damage? And then, of course, you know, a great deal of the book was really how the town coped with it and the whole pressure between keeping the tourists coming and closing the beaches or leaving them open. So he actually had two different ideas for a book. He was hoping for one maybe about pirates or about dinosaurs or about a great white shark.
And we know what we ended up with.
And we ended up with a great white shark because that's the one he got a $1,000 down payment on. And actually, he got the $1,000, and then, of course, we were living in Pennington, and he was doing freelance writing. And so we spent the $1,000 in a second because we didn't have much money. And then the publisher said, you know, where's your first chapter? You've got to write this thing. And so he sat down and wrote it. He actually wrote it in Pennington, New Jersey, in a furnace repair store, which was noisy and clangy, but I think for him it was a little bit quieter than being at home in a tiny little office in our house in Pennington with two little children running around. So that's where he created it.
Now, how did this fascination with sharks and shark attacks from kind of a fisherman's perspective, I guess, transform into what really became a lifelong passion for educating the public and working for conservation of sharks?
Yeah, we very quickly, I think right after Jaws came out as a movie, ABC Sportsman asked Peter to go down to South Australia to Dangerous Reef to dive with Rodney Fox. And I went down with him, and that was just a life-changing experience for Peter to be in a cage and to see this incredible, beautiful, magnificent animal. And I know from that moment he was really transfixed by them. in a physical way, because there he was out there with them. And so ABC Sportsman asked him to do many more shows about sharks. And I know quickly, I would say maybe just two or three years after that show, Peter was on a show where he saw hundreds of hammerhead sharks that had been finned and were just lying dead on the bottom. So it was apparent almost immediately how damaging many of the practices were in the ocean, the long lining and the finning of sharks and, of course, pollution and all that. So he immediately started thinking about conservation issues and bringing that into many of his books. And I was on the board of Environmental Defense Fund and working hard at various environmental issues. And so together we really worked consistently on conservation issues through the 80s, 90s, and until his death.
Well, I know, obviously, you said we didn't know much about sharks back in the 60s and 70s. There are still plenty of open research questions, but we know a lot more today, and we now know that we're much more of a threat to sharks than they are to us. And I know, Wendy, you're a little bit of a policy wonk. Could you just briefly give us a little bit of an overview of what some of the biggest threats are that are facing sharks?
Well, I would say really the biggest is shark finning for shark fin soup. And shark fin soup is part of the celebratory meals in Asian cultures, especially in China and Taiwan. And with the increase in the middle class in China, I mean, millions more people who can afford and who want to afford shark fin soup, that has put intense pressure on shark populations around the world.
I say, and the fishing or the finning for this Asian market is happening all over the world, not just in Asia, right?
No, it happens all over the world, yes. Shark fins are processed all over the world and sent to China. And it's anywhere, I mean, the estimates are, and the very solid estimates are, that it's anywhere from 50 to 70 million sharks killed every single year.
Wow. All right. Well, Dana is joining us from Wellfleet. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning, and thank you very much. I'm really glad that there are shark conservation movements out there. I'm grateful to have these guests on your show. One thing I would like to mention is the way the Cape Cod Times covered the so-called monster shark tournament on Martha's Vineyard this past weekend, which I think is a further testimony to human ignorance about sharks. They made it out to be like a family fishing adventure, and there was an obscene photo of a thresher shark hanging. Once again, it's this hubristic attitude of people, especially these macho men who feel more virile if they can land a big shark, you know. And I think the tournament should be banned. I mean, as a local.
Well, Dana, I know you are not alone. There are a lot of people who are opposed to the shark fishing tournaments, but then a lot of people who also really enjoy those tournaments. So thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us.
I bet the sharks don't.
I'm sure the sharks don't really enjoy the tournament.
Hey, Heather.
Yes.
I'm just interested to hear from Dana, and I've been supporting a catch and release shark tournament down in Florida with the Paxton Brothers and the Moat Marine Laboratory and the Guy Harvey Foundation, and my support for them comes from a feeling that if we can change the approach to sharks through a catch and release tournament, that the kill tournaments, like the monster shark fishing tournament, will become obsolete, and that actually what will happen is that the fishermen will see that it's really exciting to catch a shark, bring him in, pull him up beside the boat. He's thrashing around. You need to measure him, see how long he is, and then at least down in Florida, if it's a big hammerhead, they will tag it. the scientists on board will tag it, and then you let the shark go. And I have seen, I've been down there for 2 years now at the shark fishing tournament, and the fishermen who used to be part of the kill tournaments are now doing catch and release, and they absolutely are thrilled by it. They, you know, when the shark is released, there are cheers that go up, there's streaming video, and so all the families are on the terrace of this town plaza, cheering as the sharks are released to go away and make some more baby sharks and maybe be caught again. So I think that this is a very constructive and fun and exciting way to change shark tournaments.
Yeah, it sounds like a kind of a win-win for scientists and for the fishermen there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's been the position of Jaws Fest as well, is to see if we can't show that conservation initiatives can also bring business to the island. The Monster Shark Tournament is a huge revenue generator for the town of Oak Bluffs. We appreciate that, but we appreciate that sharks really need our help too. So there is a win-win in there, and we'd love to see the organizers kind of look at that. And we've got a lot of great people around who can help them see that happening.
So I wonder, you know, I know Jaws Fest in 2005, when it happened on Martha's Vineyard, brought something like 2,500 people to the island. Are Jaws diehards, do you have a sense, are they shark lovers? Are they shark haters? Or is it really not about the shark as much as it is about maybe the other characters in the movie or the making of the movie? I mean, what really kind of drives these folks?
Well, certainly the hundreds and thousands of letters that Peter got were mainly letters saying, "Oh, I was just so excited," and so many of the letters, the people said, "I whipped to the library to go find out more about sharks," and there were many, many, many people. I mean, I still meet them that became marine biologists because of Jaws, I think now especially, but it happened within 5 or 6 years after Jaws. And by the way, I just do want to say right now that Peter and I were just horrified that some people took Jaws as somehow an endorsement or an excitement to go out and kill sharks. And so that's one reason why we just did everything we could throughout the years to change that attitude. But I think, especially now, Jaws is very much a learning tool. I mean, teachers assign Jaws to their classes in middle school. It's a big book. It's a grown-up book. You know, it's a book that kids can read and be excited. And then the teachers use it to get children to do research on the ocean, sharks, and other marine life.
Well, Joel is calling from Brewster. Joel, what's on your mind?
I'm very curious how one gets a fish hook out of a live and thrashing shark's mouth.
That's a good question. I wondered myself. And what it is you don't get the hook out. It's one of the round hooks, but instead of being stainless steel, it's iron. So you just cut it, clip it, and it quickly disintegrates with all the salt in the ocean. And they've tracked these sharks, and they know that the hooks basically do not hurt them. And let's just say, obviously, it's not foolproof. I'm sure some sharks are still harmed by the catch and release hooks. But for me, being I hope a practical, realistic person, I just feel that this is a good step in the right direction to have a catch and release instead of a kill tournament.
Now, Jaws the movie plays on a really primal fear, you know, of this fear of being eaten by a larger, smarter predator. I mean, I think this goes back to like evolutionary roots, that you're going to be scared of something like that. And obviously, with a mouthful of big teeth and being such a large animal, at least in some cases, I think that's not a big stretch of the imagination for people to kind of imagine that scenario. Casting them in, I guess, a less threatening light, I think, could be more difficult. So, Susan, I'm really curious, what does some of the artwork that's going to be in this Sharks Art and Conservation exhibit look like? How do you try to rework this public image of sharks through a visual medium like that?
Well, Sharks Arts and Conservation is celebrating the power and the beauty of the shark. And we have a number of different artists who are bringing in artwork. Paul McPhee, who has been approved by Universal Studios and does some wonderful Jaws art, has 8 custom pieces, and the sharks in them are absolutely gorgeous. Bill Weiger, who's involved with Shark Savers, has done a number of beautiful underwater photography pieces. We are engaging the local kids on the island to bring us artwork of all shapes and sizes, from three-dimensional hanging art, which will be displayed in the exhibit, so they can come through and see their stuff, which is wonderful. We've got a lot of science tools coming in. Greg Scommel's bringing in some of his diving cages and some of the current trackings, so we can see what's been happening with these great whites that have been seen here in the Cape and the Islands right recently. We've got all the current tracking stuff there. He's going out 3 days before Jaws Fest, so we'll have really, really fresh data to show people. Shark Savers will be there so people can meet with conservationists and scientists. Rodney Fox, that Wendy mentioned, who she and Peter had done some diving with, will be available to chat with people. Wendy will be there at different times. So there's really some great opportunities to meet the people and see the different artworks. We've got everything from three-dimensional custom-made bas-relief sculptures to shark anatomy sculptures where you can see the interiors of the sharks. Beautiful, wonderful 3.5-4 feet diameter pieces, that sculptures that are coming in both in our Sharks Arts and Conservation exhibit and then also in our Behind the Screams exhibit, which is one's in Edgartown and one's in Oak Bluffs.
So it's not just the artwork. You've got all sorts of educational tools as well to kind of tie it all together.
And movie collectibles. Greg Nicotero, who's a wonderful special effects expert and producer of The Walking Dead, has done a full-size replica of Quint, Brody, and Hooper on the transom of the Orca. So we have some things that will absolutely blow your socks away.
I must say, I've seen pictures of them, and they are staggering. Really, really wonderful.
Yeah, Joanna Shaw, Joanna Shaw Myers, who's Robert Shaw's sister, is coming, and I can't wait till she stands next to Robert in that piece and looks at it. They are uncanny.
Well, and I know Paul McPhee, who was actually an artist for Jaws, has some artwork now in the Art and Conservation exhibit as well, right?
And Paul's donating a percentage of a couple of his pieces to Shark Savers, which we're very appreciative for. And those will be on exhibit at the 57 Circuit Avenue location in Oak Bluffs, which is Sharks Arts and Conservation. They're also in the Edgartown National Bank starting, I think they're up this week. We have a sculpture from Bill Weiger called Mystery, which is gorgeous. You look at it, they're at least as pretty as dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we were talking before we went on the air, and how do you, you know, get people to break through that fear, really, of sharks and start to appreciate them for their beauty and for their power, which can also be the threat, but doesn't have to be a threat, right? I mean, it's,
right.
You know, I guess were comparing them to dinosaurs, but at least dinosaurs, we have the benefit of knowing that dinosaurs are gone. Somehow there's this real conflict, I think, between wanting to appreciate these beautiful, powerful, just unique creatures without being afraid of them. I think there's a little bit of a conflict.
But of course you do. I mean, you can still appreciate and have some fear. And a bit of fear is very healthy, for sure.
I mean, it's true. We don't want to tell people to go out and stick their arms in their mouths.
When we go into the ocean, we are going into another world, I mean, into their world. And think of lions and tigers, people appreciate and respect and know what magnificent animals they are, and they are being conserved. I mean, people are trying to keep them going as species. And I think the same thing can happen with sharks. And in fact, you know, the power of sharks, just like the power of lions, is what I think will make people want to keep them on this earth, on this ocean planet. I also am hoping, I can't remember, Susan, whether we've have any opportunity to show some of the footage of shark behavior in the Bahamas with Jim Abernathy. Jim Abernathy, who's been diving with sharks for years and years, bull sharks and also some tiger sharks, he has a quote, pet shark named Emma, who is huge. I think Emma is, I don't know, 18 feet long or something. And she has been diving with Jim for so many years that Jim can lie down on the sand, and Emma will come and nuzzle him just like a dog would nuzzle a human being. And she'll sort of nuzzle him, and then she'll swim away, and then she'll come back and give him a little nuzzle again, and then she swims away until the next day when she comes. So sharks, if they're not hungry, like any wild animal, can be acclimatized to human beings. And I don't want to anthropomorphize here, but they are still wild animals, but they do respond in different ways in different circumstances. So they are not always the big man-eating beast in any way. And as I think most of your listeners will know, sharks, human beings are not their favorite food. They want a nice fat sea lion or seal to eat because that's worth the energy. So human beings are too bony, and most shark attacks are just the shark comes, takes a bite to see what this creature is, and spits you out and swims away because, you know, you're not worth it to him. But it's too bad, you know. Sometimes that bite can hit an artery and the person dies.
Yeah, we're definitely learning the lesson about how much sharks like seals here on the Cape. With
yes, you are.
yeah, on the outer Cape with all the sightings of great whites over the past few summers. So.
Yeah, but you know, you need those great whites in order to keep the seals colony at a reasonable amount. Otherwise, the seals will just completely take over. So, but this is a classic example of having to, you know, learning human beings needing to learn how to live with the natural world, and it's too bad because, of course, we all want to have the beaches just for ourselves and the ocean just for ourselves, but we want to have the ocean a living, thriving ecosystem also. So that's going to be worked out over the years here on the Cape.
Well, I know one of the other things that's going to be part of Sharks Art and Conservation is not just visual arts, but Martha's Vineyard has actually nominated their first ever island-wide poet laureate, and one of the first, assignments is a poem about sharks that will be debuted at Shark Fest.
Yeah, at Jaws Fest.
I'm sorry,
at Jaws
Fest.
That's okay. yes, we're very excited to be working with the Martha's Vineyard Poetry Society, and I believe they just announced the Poet Laureate this week. I won't break that, but I think the press release is coming out. At the outdoor screening of Jaws, we have a really wonderful pre-movie session starting at 5 o'clock with the Hammerheads, who are playing surf music to sort of warm up the area. And then when we start our actual presentation, we've got William Waterway playing the Native American flute. And then our poet laureate, the first poem they're doing is a poem towards shark conservation. We are showing a great Shark Savers piece there as well. Wendy will be doing some talking. We have a really great tribute to Robert Shaw, Peter Benchley, Roy Scheider. And then we will be showing the brand new Blu-ray version remastered of Jaws, which will be amazing on two big screens. That's Saturday night, August 11th.
Cool. Well, and I know you're getting a lot of kids involved, both in doing art and in writing their own poems about sharks. And I think kids can be so powerful in trying to bridge this and get past some of the fear. I mean, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old little boy who both think sharks are just so cool. They, you know, I mean, they do a little bit of the shark's going to eat somebody in the bathtub, but they love sharks. They think they're so cool.
Yeah, kids love nature. And we put the fear into them, I think. And we had Shark Savers come out to the Martha's Vineyard school system in March. And Sam Whitcraft came and went to like all the schools and did an amazing job. The kids love sharks and they're excited about sharks, just like dinosaurs or polar bears or lions or any of these other creatures that really are quite vicious if you consider being around them when they're hungry. They're also really important to our global balance. And we're very excited to be doing the conservation piece. It's part of our tribute to Peter, and it's been great working with Wendy on this as well.
I just love to come right in here and say, Susan, thank you so much. I mean, I think that the way you have created a Jaws Fest this year is a wonderful tribute. to, well, I guess to Peter, but also to the natural world and to sharks. And I'm really thrilled that you're approaching it this way and that so many wonderful people are participating. I'm glad to hear you do the rundown, Susan, because it just does sound superb.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I slipped up and called it Shark Fest, but it sounds like almost like that's more of what it's turning into. I mean, you've got Discovery Channel and Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and scientists involved in this and conservation organizations, as you've already said. So it does seem like it's moving from just being about this one movie to being much more broadly about celebrating sharks.
Yes.
And we found a tremendous response in the local businesses that were really excited about the conservation component of the event. That had originally been about a 3-hour segment, and it has turned into a 3-day event within an event. So I think it shows the interest in conservation and science, and we're really excited and pleased to be able to do it. So it's the summer for the sharks, and we are sure those great whites are coming to Jaws Fest.
Yes.
They heard we have these great donation receptacles that Paul McPhee made where you can walk around the island and put money in a shark mouth. It's really fun. And we've got those around the island now. They're coming to check them out.
Well, and what that money goes...
to shark conservation.
To shark conservation and to research as well, right?
Exactly.
Because as we said earlier, there are still so many open questions. I mean, with the great whites that have been around the Cape in the past few years, I know Greg Scomel has been so excited because we didn't even really know before now where they went when we knew that they were kind of offshore off the Cape, but we didn't really know where they went and spent their winters. And so there's still so much to learn, really.
Yeah. Yes, really excited. He described it last week when we were doing an interview as this great new restaurant on the Cape that they've found, and they're coming back every year. So we don't think you should swim with seals.
All right, yeah, we will definitely stay away from seals and stay safe, but we do appreciate the beauty and the power of these animals.
We need them.
They're pretty incredible. Well, I want to thank you both. Wendy Benchley is chair of the board for Shark Savers and the widow of Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws. Susan Siegel Goldsmith is the organizer of Jaws Fest 2012 and the accompanying Sharks Art and Conservation event. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Heather.
It was wonderful. Thanks so much, Heather.
You can find a link to more information about Jaws Fest 2012 on our website. Go to capeandislands.org and click on Living Lab. This is Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab on the Point is produced by Heather Goldstone. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Steve Junker and Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.